Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report. I'm Lee Robartis with Susan Austin. On today's show, we'll hear from one of the Idaho citizens monitoring the ConocoPhillips megaload, who says police are effectively making it impossible to monitor the safety of the giant transport as it moves along U.S. Highway 12. Those and other stories, but first, these world headlines.
News brief brought to you by the International News Net.
The International Monetary Fund issued a report Thursday on a possible replacement for the dollar as the world's reserve currency. The IMF said special drawing rights, or SDRs, could help stabilize the global financial system. SDRs, created by the IMF in 1969, can be converted into any currency at exchange rates based on a basket of international currencies.
Switzerland has frozen assets that may belong to Egyptian ex-president Hosni Mubarak. A Swiss foreign ministry spokesman said assets belonging to Mubarak's associates would also be targeted to limit the chance of state funds being plundered. Estimates have put Mubarak's wealth at up to $70 billion, which would make him the world's wealthiest man.
A former Fox News employee told media watchdog Media Matters Friday, "Fox makes stuff up." The employee, who remains anonymous, said of Fox, "They insist on maintaining this charade, this facade, that they're balanced or that they're not right-wing extreme propagandists."
The website Think Progress disclosed Friday the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has hired security companies to sabotage unions and smear political opponents. Think Progress obtained emails from the Trade Association, which represents ExxonMobil, AIG, and other major corporations, showing the chamber hired the lobbying firm Hunton & Williams to spearhead the sabotage. The firm's attorney, Richard White, hired security firms HB Gary Federal, Planeteer, and Barrico Technology to develop tactics for damaging progressive groups and labor unions. Think Progress, the Labor Coalition Change to Win, U.S. Chamber Watch, and StopTheChamber.com were among those targeted. The three security firms proposed creating a false document to give to a group opposing the chamber and then expose the document as a fake. Think Progress obtained the chamber's emails through the hacktivist group Anonymous, who were retaliating against HB Gary Federal after an executive at the firm, Aaron Barr, tried to take Anonymous down.
Afghanistan's spy service says a cell of suicide bombers in Kabul was run for 3 years by Taliban commander Talib Jan, operating from the city's main prison. The National Directorate of Security said another suicide bomber cell recruited young men from religious schools and got them high on drugs before sending them on suicide missions. National Directorate spokesman Luftullah Mashal said Thursday most of the suicide attacks in Kabul were planned from inside this prison by this man. Playing a videotape of Jan confessing he had organized the January 28th suicide bombing of a Kabul supermarket that killed 14 people.
More details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
And now to some local news. The Washington State Senate overwhelmingly approved changes to the state's unemployment insurance system today, temporarily increasing benefits by $25 a week and expanding job training programs. The bill now goes to Governor Chris Gregoire to be signed. The bill passed 41-4. Republican Senator Mark Schessler, who represents Whitman County, voted no.
The House Judiciary Committee voted 8-6 this week to allow tribal police to enforce state laws and make arrests on reservations without a cross-deputization agreement with the local county sheriff's office. Under the measure, which goes to the full House with a recommendation that it pass, tribal police must first be trained and certified by the Idaho Police Academy before getting the authority to arrest non-tribal members. The panel voted Wednesday night after a contentious six-hour hearing that did not finish until 7:30 p.m. The legislation stems from the failure of Benoit County Sheriff Robert Kurtz and the Coeur d'Alene Tribe to reach an agreement on cross-deputization of tribal officers. Coeur d'Alene Tribal Police are already cross-deputized by the Kootenai County Sheriff's Department for their work on the part of the reservation that falls within Kootenai County. Last year, the tribe agreed to drop similar legislation when they thought they had reached a deal with Benamaw County on cross-deputization. Last year's negotiations were moderated by state lawmakers in Boise, but after the legislative session, the tribe found Sheriff Kurtz had made more than 50 changes in the agreement that he asked the tribe to sign. Judiciary Committee Chair Rich Wills of Glens Ferry visited Benoit County in December and helped the two sides come up with another deal, but the county backed out again after Wills left. This week, some Benoit County officials voiced strong opposition to the law in the committee hearing. County Prosecutor Douglas Payne said he did not want tribal police to enforce civil jurisdiction over non-tribal members regarding hunting and fishing, as well as boat speeds and dock rules on Lake Coeur d'Alene and other waterways. Payne, who is European American, said non-tribal members should not be subjected to citation into tribal court, period. The tribe can always sue. Payne added he believes the tribe will, quote, use all available means to impose its will on non-tribal members. Coeur d'Alene Tribal Chair Chief Allen said, I think they're trying to move all the other stuff onto it to muddy the water. All we're talking about is public safety for all. Republican Representative Kathy Sims of Coeur d'Alene voted in favor of the measure. Kootenai County Sheriff Rocky Watson said having a cross-deputization agreement with the tribe has served the cause of public safety because tribal police do not have to try to detain suspects and wait for a county sheriff or other officer before making an arrest.
Defense attorneys representing Army Specialist Michael Wagnon, one of the soldiers from Joint Base Lewis-McChord, accused of murdering Afghan civilians last year, say they intend to visit the scene of the crime to gather evidence they say the Army neglected to collect. The trip to Afghanistan could cause a postponement in the court-martial, which is currently scheduled for May 23rd. Wagnon is charged with participating in a February 2010 murder during a patrol in southern Afghanistan. The Army argues that Wagnon knew the killing was planned by Staff Sergeant Calvin Gibbs. Wagnon says he believed his unit was under attack when he fired his rifle. Gibbs, Wagnon, and three others in the 5th Brigade 2nd Infantry Division face murder charges for their alleged roles in killing three Afghan civilians between January and May. At Wagnon's arraignment yesterday, his civilian attorney, Colby Vokey, told Judge Lieutenant Colonel Quasi Hawks that the defense would push to visit the scene of the shooting. Speaking to reporters after the hearing, Vokey said, quote, you cannot understate the value of walking the grounds of the case. Sometimes going to see the scene, you don't even know what you're missing until you go there. Vokey said the Army does not have physical evidence linking Wagnon to the shooting. Officers who investigated the case said at pretrial hearings that they could not get to the scene of the February killing when they first started looking into the murder allegations 3 months after it occurred. Army prosecutor Captain Dre LeBlanc told the Kurt, visiting the site in the village of Kari Clay will be, quote, extraordinarily problematic. The area is not currently patrolled by coalition forces.
Yesterday, Idaho's House State Affairs Committee rejected advice from the Attorney General's office and went ahead with approving a nullification bill that voids federal health care reform in Idaho. The bill prohibits any state agency or state employee from working to implement health care reform and says that no Idaho citizen can be forced to buy health insurance. The House State Affairs Committee heard 6 hours of testimony on the issue, most of which was in opposition to federal legislation. Many speakers felt the issue was a moral one, saying the federal government was overstepping their bounds. Last year, Idaho joined several other states across the country in filing a lawsuit against the federal government over health care reform. At the end of January, a federal judge in Florida ruled in favor of the states, saying a mandate to buy insurance and other provisions of the federal legislation is unconstitutional. The federal government has indicated it will appeal the ruling.
Republican Representative Phil Hart of Atoll introduced legislation today that would prohibit the state from investigating, arresting, or filing criminal charges against any individual who kills a federally protected gray wolf in Idaho. The bill would also prohibit state employees from helping federal agencies arrest or prosecute someone who kills a gray wolf. First-time violators would face a $500 civil penalty. Wolves in the Northern Rockies are an endangered species, but state and federal officials have been looking for ways to curb their population.
Yesterday, Idaho's House State Affairs Committee rejected advice from the Attorney General's office and went ahead with approving a nullification bill that voids federal health care reform in Idaho. The bill prohibits any state agency or state employee from working to implement health care reform and says that no Idaho citizen can be forced to buy health insurance. The House State Affairs Committee heard 6 hours of testimony on the issue, most of which was in opposition to federal legislation. Many speakers felt the issue was a moral one, saying the federal government was overstepping their bounds. Last year, Idaho joined several other states across the country in filing a lawsuit against the federal government over health care reform. At the end of January, a federal judge in Florida ruled in favor of the states, saying a mandate to buy insurance and other provisions of the federal legislation is unconstitutional. The federal government has indicated it will appeal the ruling.
The Pullman Police Department has received 3 reports of stolen Honda Civics in the past 4 days. All of the reports are from the area of Merman Drive and Terraview Drive in Pullman. All 3 of the stolen cars were locked and no keys were left in the vehicles. The years of the cars range between 1994 and 2000. Investigations into the thefts are ongoing. Detective William F. Osborne says the stolen cars belonged to students and were not used on a regular basis, which caused delays in reporting the thefts and hindered the investigations. The Pullman Police Department requests that owners of Hondas check your vehicles on a regular basis and report any suspicious activities in parking lots as soon as possible.
Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories broke ground on a new building in Lewiston Thursday. The $10 million, 105,000-square-foot building will house operators, technicians, engineers, and support staff for precision injection plastic manufacturing. The building is located in the Port of Lewiston Business and Technology Park and will be capable of housing 500 employees working in 2 shifts. With the new facility, Schweitzer will become the 3rd-largest manufacturer in Lewiston behind Clearwater Paper and ATK. Schweitzer plans to occupy the building in September.
The Idaho Park and Recreation Board decided Wednesday it will review corporate sponsorship proposals on a case-by-case basis. Corporate sponsorships represent a possible new revenue source for the struggling Parks Department that lost much of its state funding last year. Parks Director Nancy Merrill presented a set of proposed guidelines on what sponsorships and advertising would be allowed. The board declined to adopt the guidelines and instead embraced a more hands-on approach. Parks Board spokeswoman Jennifer Blazek said of the decision, quote, "The board wants to review whatever opportunities might come our way and make decisions based on the specific proposals." Merrill had previously indicated that corporate sponsorships could amount to $300,000 per year. Merrill said, quote, "We don't want to over-commercialize our parks. What we're looking at is carefully designed, sensitively placed logos."
Idaho Transportation Department maintenance engineer Doral Hoff has told television station KLEW in Lewiston that the more than 500,000-pound ConocoPhillips Megalode made it 30 more miles last night and was parked at a turnout along U.S. Highway 12 about 5 miles from the Montana state line at 2:25 this morning. The half of a giant Coke drum is expected to continue its journey into Montana at 10 p.m. tonight, if weather conditions allow. The giant 3-story, 220-foot-long load was parked at mile marker 136 on U.S. Highway 12, 38 miles from the state line, on Thursday morning. A woman monitoring the progress of the load Wednesday night into Thursday morning reports that Idaho State Police and flaggers working for the transport company Emmert International are preventing monitors in vehicles from observing whether the megaloads are complying with their Idaho Transportation Department travel permits. Leslie Rist of Lenoir said monitoring the loads was difficult.
Cleanup work resumed at Hanford Tuesday night as operators pumped radioactive waste out of a leak-prone underground tank. Hanford has 149 single-shell tanks, seven of which have already had their radioactive waste emptied into sturdier double-shell tanks. Efforts to retrieve radioactive sludge from tank C-104 date back to 2002, but work to that particular tank was placed on hold when other tanks presented difficulties. In January 2010, 75% of the waste was removed from the tank when an obstruction caused workers to cease pumping. This week, the pump was replaced, and after several hours of waste removal, workers located the obstacle that had stopped the pumping for more than a year.
Idaho Transportation Department maintenance engineer Doral Hoff has told television station KLEW in Lewiston that the more than half-million-pound ConocoPhillips megalode made it 30 more miles last night and was parked at a turnout along U.S. Highway 12 about 5 miles from the Montana state line at 2:25 this morning. The half of a giant Coke drum is expected to continue its journey into Montana at 10 p.m. tonight, if weather conditions allow. The giant three-story, 220-foot-long load was parked at mile marker 136 on U.S. Highway 12, 38 miles from the state line, on Thursday morning. A woman monitoring the progress of the load Wednesday night into Thursday morning reports that Idaho State Police and flaggers working for the transport company Emmert International are preventing monitors in vehicles from observing whether the megaloads are complying with their Idaho Transportation Department travel permits. Leslie Rist of Lenoir said monitoring the loads was difficult. Give me a general outline how the monitoring the ConocoPhillips megaload went last night.
Well, it was really difficult, and this was primarily because as we approached the rigs, we were met with flaggers that were a great deal behind the rigs. And with those flaggers from Emmert International were 2 to 3 Idaho State Police officers. And as we approached the load, we traveled for just a couple of minutes behind the load, at which time the flagger moved us over to right to a turnout. A nice ISP officer approached us, and we identified ourselves that we were citizens of Idaho. We were simply there to observe and to monitor that we weren't terrorists, that we were just concerned citizens, and we weren't going to interfere with the loads. We would obey all laws, showed them identification, got back in the car, and we moved down the road just a couple more minutes when we were again by the flagger asked to stop. At that time, 2 additional different Idaho State Police officers approached the car. I thought that the tone of their voice and their posture was, tense. And they told us that since we had already passed one segment of the transport, we would not be allowed to go past the load, go up the road, and turn around and come back west on U.S. Highway 12 and be allowed to pull behind the rigs and then pass again so that we could observe. Because we were not allowed to progress east on the highway, we were relegated from 10 o'clock in the evening until 2:22 to sit behind the megaloads.
Well, isn't that enough to monitor the loads, just staying behind in the flow of traffic to find out how?
No, sir, it wasn't. Because what the flaggers have effectively done is to put such great distance behind the megaloads, and what we noticed is that we stopped really frequently for short periods of time, and it was interesting to note that when the flagger stopped us, they did so that we had no visibility of the loads. We were never allowed to get close enough to the loads to observe anything.
So, in other words, the loads could have been stopping traffic for more than the 15 minutes allowed by the travel permit, but you would have no way of knowing because you were stopped far behind the loads and then maybe allowed to advance a little bit.
Correct. And there were two significant delays on, well, actually three. And the one that was most interesting, Lee, was when they stopped us at milepost 133. The load stopped at milepost 136.1. And at 133, when we stopped behind the flaggers, and we couldn't see anything, the trucks were stopped at 134, which is one of the pre-identified places by Emirt that they would have difficulty navigating, and we were at that stop almost 16 minutes.
Okay, so, but it could have actually been stopped even longer than that.
Correct, it could have. And, you know, as far as... you know, as far as the tires of the rigs exceeding the boundaries, there is absolutely no way that we could have observed this.
So basically, the Idaho State Patrol is alleging that it's illegal to monitor the loads effectively.
Correct. And they really are kind of treating us like, you know, in the beginning process, and I followed the rigs the first night that they left. I followed them from Lenoir, Idaho to Orofino. You know, we heard the word terrorist thrown around a couple of times. They had terrorist threats. And I think what I find most objectionable is why, as a citizen, are we, number one, associated with terrorism, when in no way, shape, or form have any of us ever been involved in this, nor would we have intended to. Why are we asked to leave public places when we committed no crimes? We're not interfering with the loads. And I think what's even of a deeper concern for me is the dual agency responsibility that our governor has put Idaho State Police officers in. And, you know, my question is what happens out there on the road, Lee, when these officers are being paid by a corporation? If, hypothetically, there were ever a conflict, who are they first accountable to, the citizen or the corporation? And my feeling on the roadway, quite honestly, by my treatment, was that I'm really a second-class citizen in the United States of America and the state of Idaho.
Have you done anything to remedy the situation for those who might be monitoring the loads in the future?
Well, I don't know because I haven't really talked to any of these people. You know, people pretty much on their own will go up there and monitor. I think what we really need to do is have more people involved in this process of monitoring so that if we want to choose to go east around these loads, we have every right to do so. Every right to do so. And that we should not be kept back a mile behind these megaloads so we can't observe.
Now, when you were stopped, did you or anybody who is with you get out of the car and try and see what was going on and how long the delay might really be?
Yes, actually, there was one woman that did make the attempt to do that, and that was not something that either... we watched a flagger run back to the Idaho State Police officer when they saw this woman walking along the roadside and ran back to the Idaho police officer, and at that point she came running back up to her car and began to move, which then there forced the woman to be picked up by the car that she was in. So they basically regulated the timing of this by controlling multiple short-term stops, some of them 30 seconds, some of them 3 minutes, all the way up the roadway.
Is there any definitive evidence that last night there were delays or violations of the trip permit or anything that a monitor would want to report?
Well, the only thing that I really would report is that when we came to a stop, we were stopped at mile point 133. And I know because I was able to listen to communications of the transport that they stated that they would be taking a short break. They were at 134.1, which is a critical turn stop spot. It was almost 16 minutes that we were stopped in that location. And what didn't make sense to us is, why would you stop and take a break at 134 when your resting and final stop for the evening was at 136.1? And then the other issue is that as we progressed up the road, Emirates International vehicles and some other unidentified vehicles were parked in all the major turnouts as we were heading up the road. So there really was not a opportunity to stop. We were moved and pushed and or delayed on these roads.
That was Leslie Rist, who lives in Lenoir, a small town along U.S. Highway 12. She spoke with KRFP last night after following the ConocoPhillips megalode late Wednesday night and Thursday morning. Rist said when she monitored the load last week, she noticed it tore off branches in residents' yards along the way and in one case took out a small tree on private property. She said at one point she alerted a guard next to the parked load that one of the brakes was releasing pressurized air. After that, crews stopped the load and welders were working underneath. Although the Idaho Transportation Department reported to the media at the time the load was stopped due to heavy snow along the route, Rist maintains two of those nights the road ahead was clear. She says she believes the loads were stopped so crews could repair the brake system. During the third night of the trip last week, the load stopped traffic for 59 minutes, prompting the ITD to say they would require a new travel permit for the second ConocoPhillips load before it can leave the port of Lewiston. That delay was caused by difficulties moving the load around a rock face adjacent to Highway 12 near Greer. The trailer carrying the load scraped the rock face, damaging the trailer and leaving paint on the rocks. The Lewiston Tribune reported that the next day, an Idaho Transportation Department official examined the damage to the trailer and deemed it fit to continue.
The owners of a Spokane County residence and two of her adult children have been charged with 5 felony and 3 misdemeanor counts of animal cruelty after a January 29th raid on her property. Carol Ann McMullen is a known hoarder and was previously raided by Animal Control in 2004 and 2006. The 123 farm animals and pets that were seized last month had been severely neglected. In the January 29th raid, officers seized 27 goats, 15 cats, 9 guinea pigs, 6 rabbits, and several dozen chickens and ducks, and a sheep. The cats and sheep were in particularly poor health and had to be euthanized. Homeowner Carol Ann McMullen was charged with 5 felony counts of first-degree animal cruelty, which potentially carry 5-year prison terms or $10,000 fines, plus 2 counts of second-degree animal cruelty and 1 count of confinement in an unsafe manner. Son James McMullen was charged with 4 felony counts of first-degree animal cruelty and 1 count of confinement in an unsafe manner. Her daughter, Kelly J. Covey, faces 4 felony counts of first-degree animal cruelty, 3 counts of second-degree animal cruelty, and confinement in an unsafe manner. Spokane County Regional Animal Protection Services, known as SCRAPS, says that in addition to the animals seized in the raid, officers found 78 dead animals on the property. After the 2004 raid, Carol Ann McMullen was convicted of 13 misdemeanors, including animal cruelty. In the 2006 raid, officers found 18 cats confined to an RV parked on the Idaho Road property. Covey was charged in that case.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. I'm Lee Robartis with Susan Austin. Have a great weekend, and remember to support KRFP to keep newscasts like this on the air.